Imagine like spending billions of dollars and years of just rigorous research to build this state-of-the-art, heavily guarded tech fortress.
Right.
Now imagine that exactly 11 days after you finally open the doors, a completely decentralized group of people on the internet just they perfectly replicate your entire fortress.
Yep, brick by brick.
Literally, they strip away the expensive entry fee, they hand out the blueprints to everyone, and they let you build the exact same structure right in your own backyard. That is exactly what happened to Anthropic this week.
I mean, the speed of this turnaround is truly unprecedented in the industry. We are looking at the total commoditization of a major proprietary software layer in less than 2 weeks.
It's insane. So if you are a developer, a designer, or really just insanely curious about how fast AI is moving right now, this deep dive is going to reveal how the so-called secret sauce of AI design was reverse engineered, and how you can actually run a better version of it on your own machine today.
Yeah, you really can.
Okay, let's unpack this, because to understand the mechanics of this open source rebellion, we really have to establish what exactly Anthropic built on April 17th, 2026, and why the market reacted with such immediate frustration.
Right, so Anthropic launched a highly anticipated product called Claude Design, and it was powered by their Opus 4.7 model. The core value proposition was actually simple, but really powerful.
Oh, totally.
It takes your text prompts and turns them into functional prototypes, pitch decks, and marketing pages.
Yeah.
But instead of returning just, raw code snippets that you have to compile yourself, it uses an artifact-first mental model.
Right, so you can actually see it.
Exactly. It gives you a fully rendered visual output right there in the browser.
And I mean, the demos were incredibly slick, like mind-blowing. But the moment developers actually got their hands on it, the complaints just started rolling in
Well, yeah, the
immediately.
honeymoon phase was short.
Very short. The first major friction point was just the lock-in. Anthropic set the pricing anywhere from $20 to $200 a month, depending on your tier, right?
Which is steep for a lot of independent folks.
Exactly. And they forced all of your work onto their cloud servers. And the export flexibility was shockingly rigid. Like, you couldn't export your work to HTML with inline assets, or even just grab a clean ZIP file of your code
No,
base.
not at all.
You were basically trapped exporting to PDF, PowerPoint, a URL, or like a Canva integration.
And if we connect this to the bigger picture, that cloud-only requirement is an absolute non-starter for a massive segment of the enterprise market.
Oh, for sure.
Because if you are an agency handling sensitive client data or a software engineer working with proprietary internal systems, you cannot legally or even ethically pipe all of your structural data and design prompts through Anthropic's external servers.
Right, the clients would lose their
They
minds.
absolutely would. From a compliance standpoint, the lack of data sovereignty makes the tool entirely unusable for production client work.
So there's that corporate limitation. But beyond that, the actual creative output started to feel really tedious. If you look at the Reddit community, specifically r Claude AI, the general consensus after like a week was just a resounding meh.
Yeah, people were just underwhelmed.
Totally. And the biggest complaint was this phenomenon the community started calling container soup.
Which is just a fantastic descriptor, honestly. Container soup is what happens when you have unconstrained AI attempting to do user interface design.
Right.
When an AI generates a layout without strict, mathematically defined design tokens, it simply averages out its entire training data. It defaults to the most statistically common web patterns.
And the most statistically common web patterns are incredibly boring.
Exactly.
Users were complaining that every single output looked identical. Like, you'd get the exact same serif fonts every single time. You'd get these ubiquitous blinking status dots, and every piece of text was trapped inside generic pill-shaped cards.
Unless you explicitly forced it not to.
Right. Unless you spent 20 minutes painstakingly uploading reference images and writing these massive prompts to override its defaults, the AI just served you this average visual mush. It's like, well, think of it like going to a ridiculously expensive high-end restaurant, but you are forced to eat the exact same generic tasting menu as everyone else in the room.
I love that analogy.
Right, like no substitutions allowed. You want to swap the Opus 4.7 model for a different LLM? No. You want to change the export format? No. You just sit there and eat the soup.
And designers and developers absolutely hate eating the soup.
Yeah, they do.
That frustration, the feeling of paying premium enterprise prices for generic, locked down output, that is exactly what triggered this incredibly aggressive open source sprint. They didn't just complain on forums, they went and built a structural bypass.
Which brings us to the rebellion itself, open design. So a team called Nexuo built this and they shipped it in just 11 days.
11 days.
It's wild.
Yeah.
And it instantly racked up over 13,000 GitHub stars, which is a massive metric for developer adoption. Plus, it is completely free, carries a permissive Apache 2.0 license, and it fundamentally changes the architecture of how an AI design tool actually operates.
Yeah, the core insight the Nexuo team had is that the artifact-first design loop is just a standard software pattern.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Well, taking a user's intent, picking a relevant skill, generating the code, rendering a preview, and packaging the export, none of that actually requires a proprietary billion-dollar AI model to manage.
Oh, I see. I actually saw a great breakdown of this that compared the artifact loop to a short order kitchen.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one.
Right. So taking the order, chopping the vegetables, cooking the meat, plating the dish, that entire process is just a standard kitchen workflow. Anthropic basically tried to convince the market that you needed their specific heavily guarded AI to run the entire building.
Right. To be the manager, the waiters, the chef, everything.
Exactly. But OpenDesign realized that the AI only needs to be the chef. The kitchen itself, the software that handles the rendering and exporting that, can just be an open source framework.
And that separation of concerns is just brilliant. OpenDesign doesn't actually ship with an AI agent of its own. It doesn't have a built-in brain.
Wait, really? It has no AI out of the box?
Nope. Instead, it operates as a local daemon. You run a command in your terminal, specifically PNPM tools dev, and it spins up a local server on your machine. This daemon then scans your system's path for whatever coding agent you already have installed.
So it just hijacks your existing setup.
Hijack is a strong word, but yeah, it intercepts your existing tools. It automatically detects 11 different command line interfaces. So if you already use Cloud Code, Codex, Cursor Agent, Gemini CLI, OpenCode, Copilot, or Hermes OpenDesign, just finds them and wires them directly into its own design workflow.
That is literally a brain transplant. Like, OpenDesign provides the nervous system and the body, the web interface, the preview sandbox, the local file system access, but you get to plug in whatever brain you are already paying for.
Precisely.
Yeah.
And for those who don't have a dedicated CLI installed, they built in a bring your own key proxy.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, you simply paste in an API key from any OpenAI compatible provider, and the daemon routes the design tasks through that token pool. Because it delegates the heavy lifting to your existing setup, the daemon runs entirely in your local project folder.
Which completely solves that massive enterprise problem we talked about earlier.
Absolutely.
Because there is no cloud telemetry. Everything saves directly to a local SQLite database right there on your hard drive. Your client's proprietary data never leaves your machine.
So we have established that having a flexible brain and a local workspace is a huge architectural upgrade.
Mm.
But we have to address the core creative problem.
The soup.
The soup. If you're plugging in a generic off-the-shelf AI brain, how does OpenDesign prevent that AI from making the exact same container soup design mistakes that Anthropic's highly sophisticated model made?
Oh, this is where the engineering gets so clever. They built a system of incredibly strict, hard-coded guardrails. They call it the junior designer workflow.
Right.
In OpenDesign, the first step isn't writing code. Turn one is a mandatory discovery form. Before the AI is allowed to draw a single pixel on the screen, you, the user, have to lock in the surface, the audience, the tone, the brand context, and the scale of the project.
Now wait, I have to push back on this.
Okay, go for it.
So we have this highly advanced generative AI capable of synthesizing millions of data points, and before it can do its job, we are forcing it to fill out a bureaucratic form and take a multiple choice test. Doesn't that completely kill the creative magic of generative AI? I mean, the whole promise of these tools was that we could just give them a loose prompt and let them dream. What's fascinating here is that infinite freedom is actually the enemy of quality. When you let a large language model dream about a user interface, it dreams in those exact statistical cliches we talked about.
Right, it defaults to average.
Exactly. By locking down those parameters up front, OpenDesign actually prevents 80% of the prompt redirects, where a user normally has to step in and say, no, make the background darker, or, you know, use a more modern font.
Ah, so constraints actually breed better design.
Yes, and they go even further if you don't have a specific brand guide. If a user leaves the brand context blank, OpenDesign utilizes a direction picker that forces the user to choose from 5 highly deterministic schools of design.
Oh, wow. Like what?
Well, you might pick the editorial monocle look, or tech utility, or brutalist experimental.
And crucially, those aren't just vague stylistic suggestions for the prompt, right? Like, they come heavily armed with hard-coded OKL Chower color palettes and specific font stacks.
Yeah.
And for anyone listening who hasn't worked with OKL Chi, it is a perceptual color space that actually mimics how human eyes perceive lightness and contrast.
That is such a vital technical detail, because when an AI uses standard HEX codes, it often mashes together two colors that mathematically exist, but visually they just clash horribly to the human eye.
We've all seen those AI websites with unreadable text.
Exactly. By forcing the AI to operate within an OKL-CHESH framework, you guarantee mathematical contrast. No AI improvisation is allowed when it comes to the core visual identity. The model cannot simply guess colors from its training memory.
And that structural limitation is exactly why the output stops feeling like AI slop. It physically cannot reach for that default muddy purple gradient that every AI loves so much, because that color literally doesn't exist in the hard-coded OKL CHESH palette it was handed.
Right. And the guardrails extend far beyond just color, too.
Yeah.
The most impressive mechanism in the entire repository is the five-dimensional self-critique.
Oh, this part is wild.
Before OpenDesign even renders the artifact for the user to see, it runs an invisible validation loop.
So the AI is basically acting as its own QA engineer. Like, it generates the HTML and CSS, but instead of showing it to you, it feeds its own code back into the LLM alongside a strict grading rubric.
Yep.
It actually scores its own output on a scale of 1 to 5 across philosophy, hierarchy, detail, function, and innovation.
And if the LLM evaluates its own code and scores any of those 5 dimensions under a 3, the script automatically triggers a revision loop. The AI considers the draft a regression and is forced to rewrite the code to fix, you know, the hierarchy or detail before it is finally allowed to render the preview for the human user.
Holding an LLM to an automated standard before it presents the work is such a smart way to burn through cheap tokens to guarantee high-quality output.
It really is.
And if that wasn't enough, they also implemented the slop blacklist. The system prompt stack explicitly forbids the AI from using specific overused visual cliches.
I mean, this is a masterclass in negative prompting. The system prompt restricts token probabilities for things like generic emoji icons or, you know, those hand-drawn SVG humans with bizarre disproportionate limbs.
Oh my gosh, yes, corporate Memphis.
Right, the ones that flooded corporate blogs a few years ago. It bans those.
It also aggressively targets fake data, which I love. The AI is strictly forbidden from making up marketing metrics. It can't just slap 10x faster into a hero section mock-up to make it look good.
No, it has to be grounded.
Exactly. It is forced to use honest placeholders, like a labeled gray structural block, when it lacks real data. It forces the AI to behave like a disciplined professional designer mapping out wireframes rather than a random text generator just trying to please you with fake statistics.
Okay, but here's where it gets really interesting, though. We've established these intense guardrails. But usually when you put a system in a straitjacket, you severely limit what it can actually do.
True.
Yet looking at the source files, OpenDesign shipped with an absolutely staggering volume of capabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Out of the box, it features 31 composable skills.
The way it handles these skills is so elegant. They are just simple skill.md folders. You literally just drop one of these markdown folders into a directory and the daemon parses it.
So simple.
Under the hood, that markdown file acts as a massive context payload. It injects specific structural schemas right into the LLM's context window, instantly teaching the AI how to build entirely new categories of artifacts.
The repository includes 27 different prototype skills.
Mm.
If you need a financial dashboard, a SaaS landing page, a dating app web interface, or like a complex multi-screen mobile onboarding flow, you just invoke the skill, and the system prompt dynamically updates to guide the AI through that specific architecture.
Wow. And it also ships with 4 distinct deck skills for creating presentations. My absolute favorite is the bundled Gazang PP format. It instructs the AI to generate these gorgeous horizontal swipe magazine-style presentations complete with WebGL backgrounds.
Which is incredible for open source.
Yeah.
And beyond the raw functionality skills, it comes preloaded with 72 brand-grade design systems. And again, these are not just generic color themes.
Right.
These are meticulously documented brand tokens for companies like Stripe, Vercel, Airbnb, Tesla, Shopify, and Apple.
But wait, how does the AI actually map its code to something as specific as the Stripe design language without messing it up? Because Stripe's design is notoriously detailed.
Yeah, so it references a standardized 9-section schema for every brand. The markdown file defines strict rules for color application, typography scales, specific padding and margin spacing, and component layout.
Okay.
Because the AI is forced to pull from this 9-section schema, the resulting code adheres perfectly to the official design languages of those companies.
I mean, the idea that you can just route a prompt through a markdown folder and instantly teach an off-the-shelf AI how to build a pixel-perfect, stripe-themed dating app, it genuinely feels like magic.
It really does.
But the NextSwire team didn't even stop at code and layout.
Yeah.
They integrated media generation right alongside the HTML workflow.
Oh yeah, this elevates the tool from a simple code generator to a full multimedia asset factory. It supports GPT Image 2 for generating bespoke posters, user avatars, and infographics directly into the layout.
Nice.
And it integrates Seedance 2.0 from ByteDance, allowing the AI to generate 15-second cinematic video shorts to use as hero backgrounds.
The inclusion of hyperframes is what totally blew my mind, though. OpenDesign allows the AI write complex HTML and CSS animations. Then the demon actually spins up an invisible, headless Chrome browser in the background.
Just running quietly?
Yep. It plays the animation, takes rapid-fire screenshots, and uses a tool called FFmpeg to stitch those frames together into an actual MP4 motion graphic.
It's automating the entire motion design pipeline. You can prompt it to build a TikTok-style vertical video with karaoke captions or an animated data chart race, and the demon handles the headless browser rendering locally. It drops those real MP4 and PNG files right into your local project workspace.
All of this sounds like an absolute utopia for builders. I mean,
yeah.
a local, slop-free, multimedia design factory that hijacks your existing token pool. But we definitely have to ground this in reality. Who actually benefits the most from this specific architecture? And more importantly, what is the catch?
Right, because there's always a catch. The target audience is incredibly defined.
Mm-hmm.
It's developers, technical founders, and digital agencies.
Mm-hmm.
For that specific cohort, OpenDesign is a massive operational win.
Because of the cost.
Exactly. If you are already paying a monthly subscription for a coding CLI like Claude Code or Cursor, the incremental cost of running OpenDesign is exactly $0. You are simply routing highly disciplined design tasks through the token pool you already pay for.
So to ask you, the listener, a direct question, are you willing to wrestle with the command line for 5 minutes to save up to $200 a month and guarantee that your client's proprietary data remains entirely secure on your local machine? For the technical crowd, the answer is an overwhelming yes.
For sure.
Yeah.
But the catch is the friction required to get there. There is no simple point-and-click setup. You cannot just download a DMG installer for a Mac or an EXIC file for Windows.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, running this on Windows is still officially considered experimental.
Oh, that's rough. So you have to be deeply comfortable opening a terminal. You have to ensure you have Node version 24 installed. You have to use the PNPM package manager, specifically version 10.33. And you have to know how to actually troubleshoot local package dependencies if something goes wrong during the installation.
Yeah, it's not plug and play. Furthermore, it completely lacks integration with consumer-friendly tools. There is no Canva export pipeline. If your agency workflow fundamentally relies on handing off generated designs to a non-technical marketing team via Canva, Anthropic's Claude Design still holds a significant operational advantage there.
It's also worth noting there are other players entering this open source space who are trying to bridge that technical gap. Like a project called Open Co-Design recently launched as an alternative. It has around 3,000 GitHub stars and uses an MIT license. Instead of running entirely in the terminal, it's packaged as an Electron desktop app.
And that Electron wrapper makes the bring your own key setup much easier for users who are intimidated by command line demons.
For sure.
However, that ease of use comes with a trade-off. Open Co-Design ships with far fewer composable skills and a much smaller library of design systems compared to OpenDesign.
Makes sense. The consensus across the developer community and tech blogs is actually quite clear right now, though. If you need to do a quick, flashy stakeholder demo, or you are a completely non-technical user who wants a polished interface, pay for Claude Design.
Yeah, absolutely.
The zero setup convenience is worth the enterprise price tag for that. But if you are doing actual local production development where you need to control the code, avoid visual slop, and protect client data, you take the time to set up OpenDesign.
It's the classic trade-off between convenience and granular control.
Hmm.
But what is truly remarkable about this sequence of events is that the open source community managed to provide a level of architectural control and quality assurance, specifically with features like the five-dimensional automated critique and the OKLDAP palettes, that the proprietary multi-billion-dollar tool didn't even attempt to build.
So what does this all mean? Let's briefly recap this incredibly wild timeline. A major tech company launches a flagship AI product. It is highly sophisticated, but it's tightly locked down, expensive, and prone to generating generic output.
Yep.
And in exactly 11 days, a decentralized group of developers not only replicated the core functionality, but they arguably engineered a much more robust, slop-free, and flexible alternative.
They systematically prove that the artifact-first design loop is not a proprietary moat. The mechanics of taking intent, generating code, and rendering a preview is simply a portable software capability. It can be wrapped around literally any large language model on the market.
And that leaves us with a really fascinating thought to mull over as we wrap up. If the actual machinery of AI design, like the complex workflows, the generation loops, the artifact rendering, if that is no longer a defensible sauce moat, but rather a bundle of open source files anyone can download for free, what is the future of these massive AI software companies?
It forces a massive shift in their entire value proposition. When the technology itself is commoditized almost instantly, you can no longer charge a premium just for access to the utility.
Exactly. In a few years, will we stop paying tech giants for their software and instead only pay them for their taste? Think back to that heavily guarded tech fortress we talked about at the beginning. If the structural blueprints to the skyscraper are entirely free and anyone can build the exact same building right next door, then the velvet rope out front isn't protecting the building anymore. It's only protecting the curator's taste. The question is, how much are you willing to pay for that curation? Something to think about the next time you're stuck eating the container soup.